Hello, everyone, and welcome to Real Estate Right Now, where real estate matters that matter to you. My name is Jay Izzo, and I am your host, and we are live from the Linda Craft Team Studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina, part of the Research Triangle Park. And I'm going to tell you something. Today's show is absolutely something that everyone is talking about when it comes to real estate, and actually when it comes to, I would say, anything in general when it comes to our economy, and that is, are we in a recession? And what would a recession really look like if we are or are not in one? And we're going to talk with two outstanding people, by the way. So my first guest, he's no stranger to the show. His name is Steve Krueger. And Steve is a listing and buyer specialist with Linda Craft and Linda Craft Team Realtors. But here's what you don't know about Steve, okay? Because we've never talked about this on the show. Steve actually has an economics degree. And Steve, where do you have your degree from?
That degree, Jay, is from the University of Tennessee, and it is Gator Week, so go Vols.
Ah, so it's Rocky Top.
Exactly.
Right, yeah. Do you sing that song, actually?
I sing it all the time. I've not been able to sing it for a long time when we play the Florida Gators, though.
Right.
But this year it's different.
Do you think
different.
This year it's
I'm
different?
I'm going to sing it all day long on Saturday.
Good for you. That's awesome.
And I see Jennifer Seck. Boo.
By the way, if you are joining us live here on Real Estate Right Now, I just wanted to say to you, people like Jennifer Seck is out here, you can ask us questions during the show. So please feel free. If you have a question regarding real estate, we would love to entertain those questions. We have, like I said, we have two great guests. One has got a degree in economics. The other's got a degree in finance. And we're going to be talking a lot about recession. So, Steve, let's just jump right into it here. People are asking, what are we in a recession? So, if just giving your opinion from an economic standpoint, are we in a recession or not in a recession?
That's a tough one because there's a reason they have not yet declared that we're in a recession. They being, you know, like there's a lot of talk. And when I say that, right. There's plenty of economists that'll argue various things.
Right.
So typically the main thing that they look for in determining that you're in a recession would be two quarters consecutively of a drop in the GDP, the gross domestic product.
Okay.
We have had that this summer, marked the second quarter in a row of a drop. So that's why there's a lot of talk. Okay. Are we already in one? The interesting thing is they look at all these other factors too, right? They don't just when they declare we are in a recession, and I don't remember the exact, there is a body that actually will like declare it.
Okay.
But there are other factors they look at, primarily RPI, which is real personal income.
Right.
And unemployment rates. Well, employment rates are still really strong and stable. And RPI has been increasing for 5 years and is still stable. Okay. So those two indicators would say we're not in a recession.
Okay.
So are we in one? I mean, that's a great question.
Okay. So, I mean, how much does the housing market play as a factor whether we're in a recession or not?
So when you look at a housing market, it does tend to move with the recession, right?
Right.
And so what we're facing right now and where there's a lot of concerns is because of inflation. And inflation does go hand in hand. We saw in the last 2 years growth in housing prices like we've never seen before.
Right.
That contributed to inflation. There's a lot of other things that happen to contribute to inflation as well. But all that extra money in the hands of consumers led to more consumption, right? So is that a contributing factor to what's now looking like a recession coming on? You can say yes. Historically, what happens when we're in a recession is, and that's what's also so complicated. This at least for, at the moment, this recession doesn't look like, if we're in one, doesn't look like what happens all the time with recessions.
Okay. I want to stop you there. So what does typically a recession, I mean, what does typically a typical recession look like? I guess, I mean, are there some things that, I mean, I know you gave us the two quarters, but what would it look like from a consumer standpoint where we go, oh, okay, I'm in it.
Well, one would be unemployment starts to increase.
Okay.
So as less people are, as more people are all of a sudden out of work, less money is being spent, excuse me. So all that's now adding to the economic decline, right?
Right.
We're not seeing that at the moment. Are we going to see that? That's
okay.
That'll be, if that starts happening, right? If that's why they always talk each month, you'll hear the latest employment figures and depending on whether they're good or bad, politicians are going to hang their hats on those. And the reason why is that's a good indicator of what's going on with the economy.
Okay.
So, but what's really interesting, typically in a recession, we also see interest rates drop. So interest rates, because what happens is you've got a decrease in demand for mortgages, and mortgages will tend to drop in price. But we're in a situation right now where we have the Fed fighting inflation, doing all these things
that is
increasing the interest rate.
Right.
So, you know, in a lot of ways, this is kind of uncharted territory.
Yeah, it is kind of bizarre, isn't it? Because you're right. You know, when we were in recession back in, what was it, 07, 08, somewhere in there?
Right.
We saw, this is when we saw interest rates hit the rock bottom.
Right.
And what we've been seeing is the Fed has been raising interest rates consistently. Matter of fact, they just raised them again.
Right.
And so that kind of is contrarian to.
Yeah. Well, and we may not be currently in a recession, right? So one of the things that could very well happen is what the Fed's doing works. Inflation starts to come down. We still go into a recession.
Right.
Recessions usually last typically 17 months on average,
just
historically when they average them all out. Right. Some a lot shorter. We were in one at the start of the COVID pandemic. Only lasted 2 months. It's like the shortest recession in the history of this country. But, you know, if we go into one, at some point those interest rates probably start to drop because inflation's cooling off. The Fed won't keep raising interest rates and things like that. But it's interesting you bring up what we call the Great Recession, which coincided with the housing crisis.
Right.
And that housing crisis definitely helped lead to that. And that was a completely different situation than what we have today. And people need to remember that. People that are concerned about housing in particular, this is not 2007 all over again.
Right.
We had incredible growth in values the last 2 years in houses. But that also, in my opinion, was just a market correction with a lot of pent-up value in houses that was not realized. We went through a period of time through the housing crisis of houses depreciating in value, which historically just doesn't happen.
Right.
Right. And then we came out of that and values started going up. They didn't go up and recapture all that lost value until the last 2 years. So to me, what really happened the last 2 years, and low interest rates certainly spurred it on, but people finally received all that pent-up equity in their houses that they had lost or was lost during the housing crisis. So now you fast forward to now. Well, let's go back to that. That certainly brought on a recession where we had people weren't selling houses. People were being foreclosed on their houses.
Right.
You had all that going on.
Right.
And that created an extremely large supply versus demand. That's not what's going on today. We're not seeing, in fact, people have made so much equity the last 2 years and prices are just flatlining. They're not dropping. If they're dropping, they might be down like a percentage point, but it's nothing like back then. So we're not seeing a situation where all of a sudden we're going to have all these foreclosed properties on the market depressing values.
Right.
And the other thing is you mentioned the interest rates. So what they really did back then was what's called a strategy of quantitative easing. And that was to bring those interest rates down to stimulate the economy, to get people to buy houses. If you recall, both W and Obama had programs in place to give credits to first-time home buyers to stimulate the housing market. And in fact, at some point it didn't even necessarily have to be a first-time home buyer. I forget what that criteria was. But so, yeah, you had a recession there where they wanted to stimulate the economy by getting people buying houses. Right now, because of inflation, they're actually trying to discourage the housing market to cool things off. But that's hopefully a strategy that won't be going on too much longer.
Eventually,
we see the interest rates start to come back down.
So there's a couple things that I want to kind of talk to you about, because we know, one, we talk about employment, right? And we have seen a little bit of an employment drop, although the numbers are still real high. But we do, I mean, we are seeing, because I mean, you know, I was just in LinkedIn this morning and they have, you know, the, you know, who's laying off people, right? And we're seeing like, you know, Meta, which is Facebook, is going to, looks like they're going to do something, and Google's going to be laying off some folks, and Snap, of course, did. Mm-hmm. Some of the tech companies have been laying off, and we've seen other companies do that. We're seeing some layoffs, but evidently they're not significant enough to alter what we would normally consider a normally recessionary type of employment. Is that fair?
At least for now. I mean, just when you look at just the numbers that they've been coming out with, employment is still stable.
Right.
But if, I mean, if we truly, if we're not in one and we're about to go into one, then you'll probably start to see the unemployment numbers go up. And maybe what you're talking about is even a sign of that. So hopefully we don't see that.
Right.
Excuse me. But that is certainly one of the indicators that would tell us we're in a recession. If we start seeing the unemployment figures increase because of things like you're talking about, layoffs and everything else.
Now, there's also another thing that's come across the Wall Street Journal today. And we of course, live in the Triangle market, Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill.
Right.
We live in this market, but I'm seeing a lot of people compare year over year.
Right.
And of course, it's significantly different year over year. And that's not a fair comparison either, is it, when it comes to the trying to compare it to a recessionary market, is it?
As far as just the housing prices?
Yeah, the housing prices change.
Yeah, because, well, you can compare things year to year. Anything over the last 2 years, I mean, you almost have to compare month to month because things just skyrocketed so fast. What we've seen here in the Triangle, and even from what I've read nationally, but here in the Triangle, we've not really seen prices drop. They're everything's local and everything's some properties. Certainly, if there's somebody out there that's like, I sold my house for less, I get it. But there's also people that sold their house for more because I've been in representing buyers in multiple offer situations lately. As a whole, you see nationally prices down like 1%. Not year to year, though. Year to year, it's still way up because we saw a ton of appreciation. So that's one of the interesting things, too, when people are talking about, like, an article that you sent me, somebody was talking about, you know, nobody's buying houses. Well, they're certainly buying houses. And if you're saying this same house was worth $650 a month ago, like 3 months ago, and now I can only get $625 for it, I get that that hurts, right? Oh, I should have sold it back then when I could get $650. Now I'm only getting $625. Right. If you had sold it in December of 2021, you weren't even getting $625. So you're still way up. It's kind of like you didn't, I mean, it's probably not a great example now because of where it sits, but it's kind of like when you were thinking, well, I should have bought Bitcoin when it was this price. Once it got to a certain price, you still made a lot of money if you bought it somewhere in between, right? So it's all kind of relative to
Now tell me about this, because I did see an article in the Wall Street Journal. I don't have it pulled up here, but that the luxury market has taken maybe a little bit more hit.
Right.
And how does the luxury market affect us in terms of when we're trying to predict things like, is it have any bearing on possibility of having a recession in the luxury market, or is that such a different and unique group of properties?
That's a good question. I don't know for sure. I'll give my opinion on
it. That's great. That's what I want.
So the luxury market is its own entity.
Okay.
It did really well the last 2 years because everything did.
Right.
And what was happening was when you think about when the housing market's going great, we have a lot of move-up buyers. Mm-hmm. So you had a house that all of a sudden is worth $750,000 that you bought for $450,000 however long ago. You now have all that equity that you can put into a house at a really low interest rate, and you're like, we can now afford $1 million house. So you're moving up into that $1 million house.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, people aren't doing that. So that is an indication, right? When you, it makes perfect sense that the segment of the market that's going to be hurt the most right now is luxury.
Right.
Because all those people that right now might say, I'm going to sell this house for $750 and go buy that $1 million house, the house they own at $750 might be at an interest rate of 3.5%. And so they're not all of a sudden as anxious to go buy $1 million house or $1.5 million or whatever at 6.25 interest, 6.5 interest, whatever it may be. So that's an indicator. But I also would say anytime our market's sort of normal, the luxury segment just has longer days on market. It is a sort of different segment. It's not a true bellwether of what's going on with the average person, because the average person cannot afford a luxury house.
Right. That's why it's luxury. So we have to look at it as a bell curve and where the majority of people are at. That's what we're going to kind of focus on. Don't look at the ends.
I would say
Yeah, don't look at that. Don't look at the low ends that are still going high, or the high ends that are going a little bit lower. Stay right in the middle. That's your best bet to kind of give a prediction.
And to that point too, like the lower end of the housing market does better. You know, even in the when we went through the housing crisis, the lower priced homes, they're always going to do better. For one thing, those are going to be the properties that first time home buyers buy.
Right.
If you're a first time home buyer, you're not saying, I'm not willing to move from a 3% interest rate to a 6% interest rate, because you don't have an interest rate at all at the moment.
Right.
You may be saying, I really wish I had bought a house when it was at 3%.
Right.
And now I can't buy quite as much house because I'm focused on my monthly payment.
Right.
But you're a first-time home buyer. You're saying, I'm not going to keep putting money into rent. I'm going to buy a house. So that lower end of the market that the first-time home buyers tend to buy is going to do better even in a down market than the more expensive houses or even the median priced house. And also those are more attractive to investors. So you're going to have investors taking advantage of a bad market if you get into one. And that's also what they want to buy. Because the lower priced houses tend to give you a better cap rate if you are buying them as rental properties.
Sure.
Or if you're flipping houses, they're just easier to make a lot of money on too.
So let's talk about this though. Okay, let's say, what is really the difference between an interest rate? I mean, in terms of a payment.
Right.
Let's say it's a $200,000 house. Mm-hmm. What's really the difference in a payment between 3.25 and 6.25?
Chris can answer that question better than me, Christopher. All
right. Yeah.
But I was just reading something that showed, and Christopher can tell you when he comes on if my math's correct here. But I saw, and I don't remember the price point of the house or the amount of the loan, but it showed where somebody buying whatever the price range was, it would have been $1,200 a month on an interest rate that was probably around 3 versus $1,800 a month on what it is right now, 6 something. So it gets very significant, because I do know the rule of thumb is every 1% of interest rate decreases your buying power by 10%.
Okay.
So we're talking about an increase of 3.5%, maybe even 3.75%. I mean, people were getting loans at 2.75%. So it is significant. So now all of a sudden, if you're somebody saying, I want my monthly payment to be $1,200 a month, that's no longer the same price of house as what it was, just 6 months ago. And so that is why you see pressure on housing prices too.
You have a lot of notes with you.
So
pull something from your notes and let's talk about some of this recessionary stuff that you have with you today.
So the one key in these notes, most of them I've already touched on.
Yeah.
But I will point out there was something about in this market, people choosing to rent their houses
instead
of selling them.
Right.
And to me, so it's an interesting question. And the first part of that is, well, what is that person doing? What's the next step in that process? Are they going somewhere and renting?
Right.
Are they going somewhere and buying and they don't need the proceeds from their house?
Because
they must. I mean, they're not cashing in the proceeds of their house. But so are they buying something else? Whatever that scenario is, I don't think it's a bad idea. I mean, I think real estate's a great investment. So if you own a property and you think, well, it's only got, 3% interest rate on it, and I think I'm just going to hold on to it as an investment. To me, that's a smart thing to do potentially. But you still want to look at it, analyze it. And I would say you need to talk to an expert. In this situation, that expert would be somebody like me.
You need
somebody that can analyze it and tell you this particular property you're talking about, here's what we can get rent rate. Because my point to that is, let's say that house is worth $500,000.
Right.
Now, if you own that house just free and clear, you could sell that house minus the commission, and maybe you make $470,000. if you did that, do you want to put $470,000 into a real estate investment or into the stock market? Or right. What would you do if I just handed you $470,000? Because that should be the first answer to that question.
Right.
Now, if it's not real estate, I'm not so sure your decision to just hold this house now as a rental property makes a lot of sense.
Right.
Because you're still just taking the opportunity of that money and choosing to leave it in real estate instead of putting it into something else.
Yeah, but okay, I'm going to push back on you a little bit here because, all right, I see that, but here's the thing. I've got that house at 3.25% interest.
Right. So that person's a little different because they don't own it free and clear.
Right, okay.
And now the reason I still say talk to an expert okay. is how much equity do they have?
Okay.
So let's take that same $500,000 house
okay.
and they have $200,000 in equity. So probably does make a lot of sense to if now you want to start essentially having your money invested into real right. estate, sure, hold on to it. That's a low interest rate and you're locked into that for a really long time.
Right.
You can create some wealth over the next 30 years or right. however long. But I would also say talk to somebody and put a plan together because you have $200,000 sitting in that house mm-hmm. that you're not tapping into. And the right. way you make money investing in real estate is through leverage, and you can leverage that money. So now take that same house and let's go take a HELOC. Christopher can help them with that.
Okay. What's a HELOC?
HELOC is a home equity line of credit.
Okay.
So now they're going to borrow $100,000 on that house. So now they're right. renting that house. They're right. drawing rent. But they're also going to borrow $100,000 of that equity. And now they can go buy a $350,000 house with 20% down. Let's call it $5,000 in closing costs. So now they've got $75,000 invested in that $350,000 right. house. They've still got $25,000 left over from the HELOC because I'm going to have them buy a little bit of a fixer-upper. And now they put $25,000 into that house, right?
Right.
So they've spent the total $100,000 that they borrowed, and they now own a house worth $400,000 that they invested $375,000 as far as the $350,000
right,
purchase
right,
price
right,
and
right.
the $25,000 renovation costs, okay? So now that's $400,000 house. Fast forward 5 years from now, and let's just say that house is worth 5% annual appreciation over 5 years really gives you more than 25%, but right. let's just call it 25%. So that $400,000 house is now worth $500,000 5 years from now. So sell that house for $500,000, pay your real estate fee. You've made $470,000. You owe $280,000 minus whatever you've paid in principal over the last 5 years. So we'll call it $270,000. $470,000 minus $270,000. You just made $200,000 by borrowing $100,000 from that house. So I just helped you double your money in 5 years. That's what you want to do. Okay.
Are you going on the road with this?
I would love to.
Because that's just genius. Yeah. That is absolutely genius.
And that is what – if you – are making the decision that I'm going to hold this property as a right. real estate investment, I don't think that's a bad idea at all. But let's up your game. Let's build a real estate portfolio. Let's have you right. owning five houses in the next 10 years. You know,
right.
Think about what those are going to
even,
be worth.
Even with the interest rate.
Even with the interest rates. Because the other thing about interest rates is we do expect them to come down at some point. Again, we talked about the recession. In a right. recession, typically interest rates come down. So if we're not in one yet and we're about to go into one,
right.
a year from now, 15 months from now, as right. those interest rates come down, you just refinance that property. And that's also where I know I was talking to Christopher earlier, asking him about ARMs, which aren't great right now, but right. ARMs typically are going to be a better deal. You're not going to be in that. You could buy it at the lower interest rate of an ARM and refinance within that 5-year window. So
that's just genius.
It's a great way to take that asset and just keep growing it.
This is where you've got to have help like you that really understands that
right.
because I mean the average person that's watching the show from wherever you're at watching. And by the way, thank you for watching all over the world or listening. We appreciate you doing that. But this is where they really need to sit down with you if this is something that they want to do, and they need to work out the math because there's some math here there. And I'm sure that, you know, you want to talk to your CPA or whoever as well and get that. Go ahead.
Your team should have a good attorney, a good CPA, and a good real estate broker.
Right.
And then you put together with the attorney has to do with setting up an LLC more than likely. So for one thing, you have less liability on right. you for those properties. and then a CPA, because there are tax advantages to owning these properties and how you do that over time. And of course, you're going to eventually have property gain, capital gains when you go to sell those houses. But that's where we use the tax code to our advantage as well.
Okay.
You can always at some point exchange those properties in a 1031 and just keep growing wealth. So depending on where you are in that journey, you know, if you're only 30 years old and have that situation we just talked about, imagine how much wealth you can create by the time you're 60. And right. you can do it without taking any more, you know, we're not talking about take 10% of your income right. every year. We're talking about just take that current equity that you have sitting in your house
right.
of $200,000, which there's a, I mean, I have helped people buy houses right. the last few years that are 30 years old and already do have at least $200,000 equity in their houses, because those houses, they just appreciated by $200,000 right. in the last 2 years. Don't even take into account whatever they put down on the house. So they could just tap in, like I said, start with a $100,000 right. HELOC loan, and then you just keep building that portfolio.
So basically what I'm hearing you say here is, okay, if we are in a recession,
right.
you could still build wealth.
Sure.
Right? You're still building wealth here.
Yes.
Right? Is what you're saying.
Definitely.
And if we're running into a recession, you could still build wealth yep. because you still have equity and you can still help people do that.
Right. And we're in a market right now where we don't have as much competition for houses. So you're not necessarily getting a steal of a value,
right.
but you're not competing with 20 buyers like you were right. just 4 months ago. And you're getting a pretty good buy on a house. So even at the higher interest rate versus waiting until we come out of the right. recession. And now all of a sudden, prices start going up, demand's going right. up, you're competing for that house again just to get a lower interest rate. Don't wait. Do it now and just refinance that house when the interest rate goes down.
Beautiful.
Or if they don't go down and you waited, you still took 2 years to, you know, like, do it now. Make some money.
That's genius. All right. So our time has gone really, really fast here. Was there a question that I should have asked that I didn't ask?
I think we covered it pretty
Did
well.
Did we cover so. It pretty well? Okay. So listen, everybody out there, listen, his name is Steve Gruber, with Linda Craft Team Realtors. Steve, help people understand how to help people get a hold of you, because I mean, that's priceless information. So let them know.
Yeah. If you want to make some money in investing in real estate, especially just using the equity you already have in your house, I'd love to talk to you. My phone number is 919-740-9795. Again, that's 919-740-9795. Or you can email me, steve@lindacraft.com.
That's awesome. Steve, you're awesome. Thank you again, brother. You're absolutely amazing.
Thanks,
appreciate
pal.
You.
Enjoy
All right.
It.
Send Chris in. That's Steve Kruger with Linda Craft Team Realtors. And wow, talk about information. Listen, if you're looking to invest, I'm just telling you right now, Steve has got the answers for you. I'm just telling you, get a hold of him. My next guest is Christopher Coy with Town Bank Mortgage. And Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
And here's the thing that people don't know about you. I mean, you've been doing this for, you said 23?
23 years, I think.
Yeah, 23 years. Okay. But you also have a finance degree, right? Well, actually a couple degrees.
That's right. Well, one degree, I have a business management degree from NC State in finance. So.
Wow. That was just what you graduated with just a few years ago, right?
Yeah, just a few years ago.
So, okay, I'm going to start off with the same question I asked Steve, and that is, there's a lot of talk, are we in a recession, are we not in a recession? And Steve gave us some parameters from his economics background of, you know, typically we see in a recession, we see interest rates go down, but we're actually seeing interest rates go up, but people are still claiming that we're in a recession. So where do you, as a mortgage lender, where are you seeing all this?
Excellent question. it gets asked a lot. And from a technical perspective, I think everybody in finance would agree that, yes, we are in a recession from a technical perspective.
Right.
But what's different about it is the feel we have right now.
Okay.
Instead of being in a fire and running out when the alarm goes off, when right. there's a recession, people are usually feeling pain, right?
Right.
Because things are going down. This situation is different because we essentially created it. So by the Fed raising the rates
right.
purposely to slow things down, people weren't already feeling the pain, and then it kind of came apart. We manually did this to right. slow things down on purpose, and that's actually going to create pain and push it on the tail end of the recession as opposed to the front of it, if you will, because if we're slowing everybody down from spending, right. The knock-on effect of that, less hours, less overtime, less bonus, all of those things will make things tighter for people down the road. So I think what's a little bit different about this one is nobody was in a lot of financial pain.
Right.
And they're raising rates to slow things down, and it's working. That being said, I just don't think it's that normal situation where right. people started to get laid off, people are running out of money, not getting overtime. Right. And then all of a sudden everybody's talking about the recession. This one, everybody was kind of doing great, and we're technically in a recession, but the pain, I think, is we've kicked that can down the road a little bit.
Yeah, because it's a little weird, isn't it? Because the what we're seeing in terms of employment is that it's stable for the most part, right? I mean, there are some industries that are, maybe getting hit a little bit, or certain, we're reading, and certainly I was telling Steve, Facebook or Meta is, going to probably be laying some people off, and Google yep. is as well. And we've seen some other larger companies do, I think Snap laid off 20% of their people as well. But it's still, for the most part, it's stable, which doesn't play into a recession as well, right?
You're absolutely right about that. And what's unique about this is rarely are there situations where it's being dialed back on the situation right. as opposed to it coming naturally. It's kind of hard to explain that, but it is a difficult one to point to. Normally when you see recession, you're feeling right. things, you could see the knock-on effects, you can point to the cause of it. Everybody's talking about this one, but none of the normal right. things are there. So everybody keeps asking, is this a recession?
Right, right.
So it's just kind of new ground a little bit on that. The first time I've personally been through a situation where, the Fed and the administrations and stuff are dialing it back manually. Usually right. something comes apart and right, then right. we're trying to fix things.
Right, 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 right. And now we're purposely doing this.
That's right.
To make this happen. Okay. In your industry, the mortgage industry, though, I know you guys did a lot. Mike Martin was on here last week, and we've had people say in the mortgage industry they were hiring because housing was just going like crazy. But we're seeing that pull back. We're I know that some yeah. people are in your industry. People are losing some jobs. How do you explain that piece in terms of mortgages? Because I would think you feel that first.
A little bit. The mortgage industry is a little bit unique that it, to your point earlier, normally in a recession, that's when the rates are going down.
Right.
So normally when the rates are going down, that potentially can create a refi environment in the right. mortgage industry. And that's a situation where the economy isn't doing as good. They're laying people right. off, but the mortgage industry might be hiring because right. everybody wants to take advantage of, saving some money on their mortgage payment. So the mortgage industry is a bit like an accordion okay. and it's expanding and contracting as need is there. Okay. Housing, is a really big part of our economy. Every house that sells, from what I'm told, touches about 2/3 of the economy, whether it's
oh, wow.
the welcome mats or the curtain rods or, the people delivering it or designing the pieces of it to get it there. Housing is really connected to everything. So that's why mortgage rates, a lot of people confuse with the Fed rate right. they're talking about, the interbank offering rate. A lot of people think when the Fed's talking about the Fed rate, they're talking about mortgage rates. There's a lot of confusion there, but in a nutshell, it's pretty interesting. So,
well, okay. This is you make a really great point here because I never even thought about it, and I don't think the viewers and the listeners are thinking about this either, is that when you... In the housing market, we focused on the housing piece, but we're not thinking about how many people. So it really does affect a larger economy. One house affects a lot of people that doesn't sell or sells, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And they don't spend a whole lot of time on this, but you'll also notice mortgage and mortgage rates and everything always comes up when you're talking about finance because of how closely it's connected. So mortgage interest rates, the fastest way to slow the economy, you know, that's the lever the Fed chose to use to slow the economy is raising interest rates. If things cost more to do them, people consider either putting that off or whether they need to. When things are really cheap to do things, everybody just kind of runs ahead on it. So by raising interest rates and raising mortgage interest rates, that's about the fastest way to cool the economy. So it's not just raising the Fed rate. Mortgage interest rates have also come up over this period of time. And that is an excellent way to just hit the brakes on the economy very quickly.
Got it. Okay. So I asked this question to Steve and he said, this is a better question for Chris. And so the question was, if we have a $200,000 house, right? And we were paying 3.25% interest on that $200,000. And now we're paying, say, 6.5% now, so twice. What is the difference in my payment on a $200,000 house right now?
In that scenario, I'm going to go with probably about a $175, almost $200 difference. I can actually calculate it for if you wanted to. But it is significant, particularly for a different part of the market or an entry-level part of the market. The discretionary income and extra income to do things in the first-time home buyer market and the lower part of the market feels that the most. And that area you're referring to, you know, that price point you're talking about tends to be first-time home buyers. And now that it's a little bit harder for first-time home buyers with, you know, prices going up and different things going on to get into the houses, hard to win the houses against the other people competing for that market. And the other people competing for that first-time home buyer market are investors.
Who have the money and the discretionary income.
Who have the money. That's exactly right.
And they have the discretionary income. And so therefore, if you're competing against them, that makes it more...
Very difficult.
Makes it difficult.
Very difficult.
For people to do that. I asked Steve about the luxury market. And there was a recent article in the Wall Street Journal that said, you know, talking about a couple in San Francisco, California, and they've had to drop their prices, right? And they're still not getting bites on the house, right? Now we're talking, you know, it's $1 million to $3 million houses, right? Is the luxury market just something so dramatically different on the other end of that normal curve that we can't really pay much attention to it in terms of how it affects recessionary or how it affects the housing market?
I think there's value to come from paying attention to it, but it is very different. You got to remember the people playing in that space are very different than the people trying to buy their first house.
Right.
The wealthy don't necessarily mind a recession now and again. Most people that I know.
Okay. Whoa. Now you're going to open up a can of worms here, Chris. So why do they not mind it?
Well, if your family, say you come from a wealthy family and your family had $10 million coming out of the mortgage crisis, right? And we've just went through 12 years of this amazing bull market. Your family might have $25 million in their portfolio.
Oh, got it.
If that's the situation, you're not worried about going on vacation this summer.
Right.
You might be summering.
As
opposed to just going on vacation. So the wealthy aren't necessarily going to affect their lifestyle at all in a recessionary period. But if we just went through 10 years of the prices running up, if it's the most expensive time in history to buy a house, if it's the most expensive time to build a house, if everything is at the top of the market and you have a bunch of money, do you want to pay top dollar for everything or do you want to deal on stuff?
Right.
So the wealthy, they're slick, you know, they pile up their money and they're about to go on a big buying spree. The investors that we're talking about, as we have in a recession, what happens? We're then driving down the price of goods and driving down the cost of labor. So everything's cheaper. So the affluent don't necessarily mind what's going on or what may be going on over the next year. That might provide a bunch of opportunities for them. In real estate, it's often said that you actually make your money when you buy something as opposed to when you sell it. So this is presenting a lot of opportunities for the wealthy.
Right. Now, this is also right where the investors are. We're seeing more investors coming to the market too, isn't it? I mean, how much of that do you actually see? I mean, or do you not see that a lot?
I see a lot of that. I literally get phone calls from all over the country. People that have never even been to Raleigh, here the greater Raleigh area is the place to be going forward, growth, real estate. And they're, you know, in the market to buy a house here just because of what they've read and heard, yet they've never been here. So a huge amount of investment going on in this area. All day, every day. Yes.
So in 23 years, you've been through the Great Recession back in 2007, 2008. Mm-hmm. And, just talking about our area, right? This is the Triangle area for people who are listening. It's Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill. Mm-hmm. We call it the Research Triangle Park because we house about 340, 350 companies mm-hmm. here. How insulated has our market been here?
I'd have to say, even though when I speak to people on the phone, no matter where they're coming from, most people feel that their area of the country is doing the best. Like they're coming from the best area of the country. What I'm really seeing, though, is the growth here in this area has been going on for a long, long time. You know, the 50s and the 60s, but it's really starting to blow up at this point. And what it seems is we've really made the transition from maybe an even or a different split of the blue collar versus white collar type of offerings. Everything that's coming up now tends to be professional and executive pay, much higher. Like all of these new jobs from Apple or that, you know, that's coming here. All of those jobs are, you know, roughly over 180,000 and all of these other companies that have been coming here, you know, right on the heels of them, the same thing. It tends to be professional and executive pay that makes a difference. When you have large concentrations of people making a lot of money coming in, they can afford the higher, you know, the higher prices for homes and such. And, they don't necessarily want to commute as far or willing to pay a little bit extra to be right there.
Unless you're from New Jersey and you think these prices are really low.
It's so funny that you say that. So whether it's, you know, 10, 15, 20 people a day I might be talking to, the only people that think the Raleigh prices, the Greater Triangle area prices, are inflated or high or use words bubble and stuff, are the people that have been here for a long time.
Right.
Everybody that I speak to that's coming from anywhere is really enjoys the value, what you get for your dollar in this area. And it's come under pressure a little bit over the last couple of years for sure.
Right.
Affordability is leaving this area for, you know, the have nots, if you will, the first time home buyers and, you know, blue collar workers that just don't have a whole lot of income. It's going to be tough to own a home if you haven't done it already.
What is your thoughts on this first time home buyer market in terms of, I mean, are we just unable to bring more houses into the first time home buyer? Because I feel like they're the people who are being left out, and I feel like rents are, you know, escalating a little bit as well. I mean, is there an answer to that at all?
There is. There's less margin in first-time homebuyer houses. The lower the price point of the house, it's going to have less amenities. It's going to have less things.
Right.
And, you know, if you're making a set margin on a house on $200,000 versus $400,000 or $700,000, there's a big difference. And a lot of the competition in that space, that's really big business. You have the national builders all playing in that space. You have, you know, everybody heard about the wood, you know, being really expensive, hard to get windows, hard to get cabinets, hard to get all these things. Well, the national builders, you know, they're buying trains full of lumber. They're buying, you know, a lot of stuff, and they can lock in their costs and get down the costs on those first time home buyer houses, the lower price point house.
Right.
They can make that really efficiently. And it's really hard to compete in that space. Mm. So, you know, if people have money to go and start building houses, most businesses exist to return equity to the shareholder. That's the definition of what you're trying to do. So do you want to, you know, if you're going after the philanthropic point and you want to give first-time home buyers houses, if that's your thing, that's fine. But most businesses are trying to maximize their income.
Right.
And by building in a slightly different price point, which might have more amenities, more to it, there's more room to get margin on those homes.
So let's talk interest rates for a second here, because right now I think I saw it was an average of like 6.29 or something like that out there. We're right between 6.25 and 6.5. And the Fed just this past week had raised their rates. Now that doesn't necessarily translate always 100%, right?
Correct. In fact, what confuses a lot of people, when the Fed's coming up on speaking and is about to give information out, where I was going with that, I'm sorry. Can you repeat that question?
Yeah, no. So the interest rate, the Fed raises the interest rate. That doesn't always translate to the mortgage rate.
That's exactly right. So when the Fed's about to speak and confirm how far they've moved the interbank offering rate, I'm literally getting calls that the mortgage rates are going to go up instantly like that. People have to remember that anything that's public information, like a rate hike, which this 75 basis point rate hike, they talked about this at the end of the last Federal Reserve meeting.
Right.
So the public knows about this, and this rate adjustment actually has already been baked into the prices that are out there, the mortgage interest rates. So over the last day or so, while the Fed's meeting, the mortgage interest rates are moving around. That's really jockeying around to see, did they price in enough to match what the Fed's doing? Right. Did they price in too much? Often the Fed will speak, they'll raise the rates, and then mortgage rates will come down a little bit right after that. Mm-hmm. That generally happens because they've already priced too much pain into the current rates.
Right.
So in the finance industry, when an unknown is going to happen, a lot of companies, what they'll do is, it's like when you're going to get, your buddy might want to punch you in the arm and you see out of the corner of your eye, you're going to take
a shot. Don't do that. Don't do that, by the way. Okay, but go ahead.
That's right. You flinch. In the finance industry, if you don't know exactly what the market's going to do, you kind of just raise your stuff up temporarily so you don't give anything away. If the market does move significantly, that you don't get picked off, if you will. So while the Fed's speaking, the last couple of days, the bond market and everything, the rates have been pushing up. Everybody's trying to read into the exact verbiage of what the Fed president might say. And, you know, that's something that's kind of unique over the last year or so, is that normally they read the Fed minutes and that's all you get until the next meeting. It seems to be more common now that the president of the Reserve will actually speak a day or so after that and have comments that may or may not coincide with what he just read the day before. And that tends to push the market in different directions very, very quickly.
So, you know, I thought I read that when the Fed raised the rate, that they actually said at the end that there's, like I heard somewhere, I read somewhere, maybe it was in the Wall Street Journal, I can't remember, Barron's or whatever, that they already hinted that they may raise it again.
Yeah, I mean, everything that I've heard and I've paid attention to says they're expecting to raise essentially 75 basis points again at the next meeting and one.
So that's baking it in. That's preparing us already.
That's right. So the finance market's already well aware of that, and that's already baked into where the interest rates are at this second. So today the Fed spoke. They confirmed it was 75 basis points.
Right.
A lot of places were thinking that some of the verbiage that came out in between the last meeting were hints that they might do 1% instead. So I think there was probably a little bit more pain baked into it up front. So when the Fed spoke, the bond market actually did come back a little bit.
Right.
And then I don't know exactly what happened after that, but late yesterday into early today, the bond market, you know, raced down, which is going to put upward pressure on mortgage interest rates. It usually takes a couple days after the Fed speaks for things to kind of settle in.
So can we expect interest rates to go up a little bit then?
My suggestion is that nothing has been acting rationally in finance in quite a while. So all the indicators say that, you know, that what they're doing is slowing the economy. You know, all the numbers that came out, except for, you know, that last CPI number, which came in, I believe, at 8.3, the inflation number that came in at 8.3 instead of 8.1, still going the right direction.
Right.
All of the numbers that are coming out are showing that, yes, absolutely, the economy is slowing. That's why technically we, you know, from a technical perspective, we are in a recession. We've had GDP down two quarters in a row. All of those things seem to be working like they should, but look how many days over the last year that normally, you know, if equities are up, stocks are up, bonds are down. If bonds are up, you know, stocks are down. Usually there's people will find safety in bonds if the stock market they're worried about. But we have numerous days where stocks are down and bonds are down or both are up, and nothing seems to be acting rationally right now. And it's almost as though they don't really have a very clear directive other than we want to slow things down.
Right.
And how they're doing it, it's almost like they've run out of levers. All they really have left from my perspective is you know, the interest rates to move around. And I think it seems as though they really wanted to make sure everybody got the message that they're not joking around. So it seems like they'll do a movement and then they'll come back and have commentary that's like really harsh, saying that we're going to go a lot more to really try to slow it down as soon as possible. So potentially things, you know, the next set of numbers that come out could be good, but that doesn't mean that they might not continue with the next 275 basis point raises. That at the end of the day should be good for us. It's kind of like taking medicine. Nobody likes it. It's not fun. Everybody, you know, sees their accounts moving around. But at the same time, at the end of this, what it should do is strengthen the U.S. dollar against our peers.
Which, by the way, it appears that we are, right? I mean, if you look at the euro versus the dollar, I've never seen it where it's almost even.
That's right.
I mean, we're real close to being even.
That's right. So at the end of this, the dollar should benefit from it. Providing you were positioned well for the rough ride, that's really, you know, the telltale for each individual that had to.
Okay, so some people will say, okay, you know, typically when we have interest rates that are, you know, up or a little up, and by the way, you know, when I got into real estate, it was like 7.5% or 7.25%, 7.75%, 7.75%, whatever, right? So, I mean, interest rates are still pretty good. I mean,
from a historical perspective, I think it's just, you know, mid sevens, right around eight is the average mortgage interest rate over the last like 45, 50 years.
Right.
So from a historical perspective, we're still right there, but we just went through that run of, you know, 3-4 years where they were just really, really, really
free money.
That's
basically free money.
Basically free money. And people like that, you know, and the expectation is they want more of it. You know, housing.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Like, look how cheap housing is. Right. Look at this awesome house and look at my payments only.
Yeah, right.
There is something to be said for that. But then everybody wonders why, you know, you have $8 a gallon of milk.
Right.
We've got to rein it in a little bit.
So, okay. So sometimes an option is to get an ARM. And if you get an, you know, sometimes you get an ARM, you get a lower interest rates, like, you know, you get it with 3.5, whatever.
Yeah.
Right. ARM. And then we get a bigger interest rate after that period of time. How have ARMs been affected in this?
That's a great question. So normally in a higher rate environment, an ARM or an adjustable rate mortgage that has the interest rate fixed for a very short period of time, and then it can fluctuate with the market. Normally, you get a benefit by taking an adjustable because short-term money is generally cheaper than long-term money. But with what's going on, the way they've had to manipulate or move the markets around by raising the rates, they actually have something a lot of people have heard of called the inverted yield curve. And what that means is short-term debt is priced near or higher than long-term debt.
Wow.
So the weird thing that's going on right now is, yeah, the rates are up, so I'll just get an adjustable rate.
Right, when they
come down, I'll refinance it. And then they ask, so what's the rate on the ARM? But right now, since the cost of that capital is almost the same, whether it's short-term or long-term debt, there's a nominal benefit, if any benefit, from getting an adjustable. So most people right now, because of the lack of benefit to doing that, will just, you know, just take the 30-year fixed. And then if everybody gets it wrong and rates don't retreat, if we don't have a window to get it back down later, at least, you know, you can set it and forget it. It's a 30-year fixed and you don't have to worry about coming back to it. Where, you know, if you're an adjustable and it's fixed for 5 years, you might have saved a quarter, a point on it, and then in 5 years when you have to redo it, what if, you know, we're in the sevens? What if we're in the eights or the tens? Right. And that's where you can find a little safety with the 30-year fixed.
Do you believe we've been on for 30 minutes?
Nope.
It went so fast, man.
Absolutely.
Listen, you've been absolutely outstanding and amazing. Tell people how they can get a hold of you, your name and your phone number and your email, so that they can reach you if they've got questions.
Absolutely. My name is Christopher. My last name is Coy, C-O-Y. I'm at Town Bank. I'm a vice president of lending over there. You can reach me at 919-306-8895. That's always the best way to get me. You can call me, text me, anything with that. My email address is super easy. It's my first initial and last name at townbank.com. So it's C-C-O-Y at town, T-O-W-N-E-B-A-N-K.com.
That's awesome, Chris. Thank you so much. Folks, you know what? This is the show. We call it Real Estate Right Now because we deal with real estate matters that matter to you that are happening right now. It's been an amazing show. As I say to you every week, listen, I know you have a lot of choices. You chose us, and I thank you for that. Wherever you are, whether you're watching us live or whether you're listening to us on a podcast, thank you so much. And as I say to you everywhere, all over the world, ciao, everybody.